You're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
The program leftists failed to silence. It's The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We're going to be talking a lot today about the dual topic of the Iran war and the failure of the Republican Party ahead of the midterms, as basically favorability totally collapses, scandal is ripping the party apart, and nothing is getting done. And shockingly or not, I mean, I don't know, you might be shocked at this. This might be business as usual, but the Republicans have decided to react to this total collapse in support for their inability to get anything done by getting even less done, by actually deciding to fulfill less of their campaign promises. It literally doesn't make any sense. I don't know how they're coming to this conclusion. It's total madness. Donald Trump got elected in 2024 on a platform that was more extreme and farther to the right than he'd ever been before. He did not get elected. He did not build the once-in-a-generational coalition that he did with MAHA and Elon Musk and Doge. And he built that by going farther to the right than ever before. He didn't enter the 2024 cycle saying, hey, you know, I've learned my lesson. We're going to, you know, we'll deport just the most criminal aliens, but the people that have been here for a while can stay. No, he went farther than he'd ever been before. He won with that promise. He did not fulfill that promise. Therefore, his support is cratering. They see the cratering support and they think, gosh, people don't like the deportations. We better stop them. Total madness. And again, total arbitrary application of political sentiment, public sentiment. Because if they cared about popularity, they wouldn't have gone to war with Iran, or they'd get out of it as quickly as possible. It doesn't matter in that case. In the case of Iran, what we're doing there is more important. It's more necessary. It doesn't matter what the people say. It's going to get done. But deportations, well, people don't like it, so we'll have to stop doing that. We cannot do that because the poll numbers are bad. They're worse for the Iran war, but we keep doing that. So it's not actually the excuse. That's not actually the reason it's happening. And again, we're just going to have to wait and see what the outcome of this, as U.S. farmers are strained as fertilizer costs surge in the war. And again, I say this is a dual topic because it's not necessarily like the Iran war is this thing where everything else is going great, and then because the Iran war happened, everybody's flipping out. The Iran war happening would actually not be that big of a deal if by this point we'd had 10 million deportations, inflation was down across the board. I mean, they could do a lot of things. Literally any of the deep state was arrested, a single one of them. FISA was undone. The voting system was secure. We've gotten nothing so far, more or less. And we go to war with Iran. So it's this combination. I think Tim Dillon hits the nail on the head when he breaks this down. Guys, y'all have the Tim Dillon video? And again, what I like about Tim Dillon, he's obviously kind of playing dumb. He's kind of, like, he knows more than what he's saying, but he kind of puts on an act as if he's shocked and confused about what's going on. And I just, you know, it's just that's the comedy, the humor, it's the spoonful of sugar to help the medicine go down, the medicine being the truth of our situation. Here's Tim Dillon breaking down the kind of absurdity of our relationship with Israel over this Iran war. Let's watch.
I don't always want to be like down on Israel. But I got to be honest, 100 times in what, 10 minutes in a densely populated urban area, I'm really starting to get the feeling, and I'm just saying this, I'm starting to get the feeling that this country, Israel, is a little bit of a problem. I'm starting to get this nagging feeling that Israel doesn't really want this ceasefire. They don't want it to work. They don't want it to work. Take a look here. Explosions rock Beirut as Israel carries out its biggest attack. the way, stop this for a minute. Israel claims in all of these buildings there are terrorists doing terrorist things. Like thinking, I don't know what that even means, but apparently there are terrorists everywhere talking about attacking Israel. And Israel has to kill everyone to make sure that none of these terrorists find a way to do it. So Israel just kind of like wholesale blowing up apartment complexes because within that apartment complex, there are, I guess, terrorists. This is what all these brilliant people keep telling us. All the advocates of the Israeli strategy here, that there are terrorists in this apartment complex, so we just got to light it up. We just got to blow it up. And who's this? Absolute bombshell on Sky News. A Lebanese rescue worker completely dismantles the Israeli military narrative. He confirms the bombed area in Beirut was purely civilian with zero Hezbollah presence. Israel internationally targeted innocent children and the elderly. Here's the problem when you embrace this total war that Israel seems to be embracing. Their argument is we're going to kill everyone, and then some of those people will be terrorists. That's really their argument. Their argument is like, if we kill everyone, inevitably, some of the people will be terrorists. Or like, you know, whatever. Take our word for it. But we have to kill everyone just to make sure. Because anyone who's thinking about becoming a terrorist, or anyone who knows a terrorist, or who might grow up to be a terrorist, has to be eliminated. So they've taken this strategy, which, by the way, I've never even seen this in like 41 years of my life. I've never seen the brutality of this type of warfare. Now, I'm sure it's existed. I'm not an idiot. But this idea that you would just go in and bomb 100 targets in 10 minutes, and a lot of them are civilians, and you are massacring people, women and children. I mean, the blowback that Israel will get from this and that the United States will get from funding it is going to be insane. You're creating terrorists all over the world that are seeing this bloodshed, and it's going to radicalize them to commit acts of terror. You can't just indiscriminately kill civilians and not expect that people are going to be radicalized and driven to violence. And Israel doesn't want this ceasefire to last with Iran. They don't. They want the Iranian regime completely neutered. They want it to be a dysfunctional country. They want it to look like Gaza. They want it to at least be Syria, where you have either a puppet government, you have kind of a dysfunctional country. They don't want an Iranian regime that is stronger and more dedicated to getting nuclear weapons than they were, but that's what they're going to get. That's what they're going to get. Because it's pretty clear to everybody who's honest that we've lost. Our objectives in this war have not been met. We simply are walking away, and we should. But the only way to win is like 100,000 troops or a nuke. That's the only way to win. And there's people in the country that want a nuke used. And there's people that have argued for that at high levels, truly, that are saying, why don't you drop a nuke on Iran? And if we go after the Iranian infrastructure, their energy infrastructure, they're going to hit energy infrastructure in the Gulf. The price of oil is going to skyrocket. We're going to have a global energy crisis. So we've lost. There's nowhere to go. It's checkmate.
So again, just a sort of brilliant breakdown from Tim Dillon. And the question is, why would they do this? That's the real question. Not, you know, what is the goal, the stated goal. The stated goal is obviously not the real goal because the actions are not commensurate with achieving the goal as stated. And yet we still pursue it. There's a very sort of obvious, deceptively sophisticated operation going on here. And I think once I lay it out, it'll be a little bit obvious. Right now, and for the last couple of years, there's been an intense drive for countries all over the world to adopt the IHRA definition of antisemitism. The definition of antisemitism from the International Holocaust Remembrance Association conflates criticism of Israel and anti-Zionism with antisemitism. So that's it. Once you have that, the cycle is set up and it perpetuates on its own volition because Israel acts insane, commits genocides, commits massacres, bombs apartment buildings full of innocent civilians, and that outrages people. So people speak out about that. People get angry about that. Now, that very reasonable and legitimate criticism of the brutal actions of a nation state is then transmuted through this definition into antisemitism. And so the worse Israel acts, the more people complain about it, the more people complain about Israel, the more you can say antisemitism is rising. The more you can say antisemitism is rising, the more money you can collect, the more you can put fear in the hearts of Jewish people and fear in the hearts of non-Jewish people and convince them to hand over more power, convince them to hand over more censorship because of the shocking rise in antisemitism that came about entirely because you redefined the word to mean criticism of a state that is acting as belligerent and objectionable as humanly possible. And the result of all of this is that all around the world, anti-Semitism laws are being passed on the basis of the IHRA and in connection with all of the other surveillance and censorship campaigns going on, like digital ID, mandatory ID to get on the internet, you know, protecting people who are under 18, despite the fact that Europe isn't even really having children. They're passing all of these laws to protect the innocent children, not from, you know, being assaulted by migrants, but from like seeing news about assaults by migrants. Because you have to cover up the consequences of your policy if you want the policy to continue, and the outcome is negative. And so these are all from just the last, most of these are from the last day or so. But we do go back to like January for Australia. But all at the same time, Macron is to host a call with EU leaders on social media ban for minors. French President Emmanuel Macron will host a video call with other EU leaders and European Commissioner Ursula von der Leyen to push a coordinated approach to banning social media for minors, Macron's office said Tuesday. Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez and representatives of Italy, the Netherlands, and Ireland will attend the conference call along with others on Thursday, Macron's office said, adding that the final list of attendees will be announced later. The main goal is to act in a coordinated manner and push the European Commission, in the positive sense of the term, to move ahead at the same pace as member states, a presidential aide told reporters. So, again, we've talked about this endlessly. You do not need the government or big tech to determine whether or not your children get on the internet. That should be the responsibility of the parents. It's only when parents abandon that responsibility that suddenly you need daddy government to step in and dictate whether or not you can look at something, but that's obviously not the point. There are a million ways to get around it. Anybody capable of using a phone at this point should know how to download a VPN and get around, you know, state restrictions. And obviously, if they wanted to, they could interdict and stop all sorts of horrible material from getting to children if that was the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is to simply have an excuse to demand digital ID. They just are using, I mean, it's just the most obvious thing in the world. They're using children and children's safety, which they have really gone out of their way to allow to be violated over and over and over again. I've used the example a billion times, but if you put an Alex Jones video on Facebook, they'll take it down before it's even fully uploaded. they have AI to detect the sound of Alex's voice or the image of his face, and they do not allow that type of material to be uploaded. Yet somehow, in the same with the same system in place, there are NGOs out there monitoring this stuff that say there's like 100 million instances of child sex abuse material on Facebook in a single year. So they have the incredible AI systems that can identify and take down objectionable material, if by objectionable material you mean right-wing political content, but nothing else. So the point I'm making is that if they wanted to stop children being introduced to stuff, this would not be the way they do it. They're doing this because it simply gives them the excuse they need to say, hey, you got to prove you're over 18, meaning we need to connect your person biometrically to your digital identification. So now there's no anonymity on the internet and they can see everything you're looking at, everything that you're saying. It just couldn't be more obvious where this is coming from. Okay, so all of the EU is getting together to do this. And of course, again, this is just the latest. The Digital Safety Act that they had a while ago was precursor to this. The digital ID program being run by Tony Blair's son, by the way, in collaboration with David Ellison, all being implemented at exactly the same time. Zelensky has now signed a law against anti-Semitism in Ukraine, up to 8 years in prison. You can go to prison for 8 years if you are, quote unquote, anti-Semitic in Ukraine, this in the middle of a gigantic war that's gone on for years, being implemented by a dictator who should have been out of office years ago, but he refuses to hold elections. Ukraine has moved into a new phase in its legal response to anti-Semitism. On April 14th, Zelensky signed into law 2037-9, introducing criminal liability for anti-Semitic acts and creating a graduated scale of punishment from fines and restrictions on liberty to prison terms of up to 8 years. For Israeli readers, this is not merely a technical legal development. It's a moral and political signal. At a time when anti-Semitism is again rising in many parts of the world and Jewish communities are living with renewed anxiety, remember, because people don't like Israel killing children, therefore Jews have to be scared, they're trying to draw firmer legal boundaries. Anti-Semitism is no longer being addressed only through public condemnation or symbolic declaration. It's now being tied more directly to criminal responsibility. Thought crime, in other words, a elevated population above reproach and condemnation. Everybody else, fair game. Again, it's not easy to imagine anti-white laws, anti-Catholic law, you know, anti-Catholic speech laws or whatever. It would be obvious the instant those things were implemented that we could be considered living in some sort of theocratic country. If it was illegal to talk badly about a specific church or a specific religion, it'd be obvious, like, oh, they're the ones in charge. We live in a theocracy. So we live in increasingly a world Jewish theocracy that punishes you for noticing. Proposed anti-Semitism laws in France and Italy stir free speech debate. French and Italian lawmakers are due to vote on new laws defining anti-Semitism proposed in the wake of a surge in anti-Jewish incidents, but which critics say could be used to censor criticism of Israel and chill protest movements. The French law, which is scheduled to be debated on Thursday, proposes a sanction to implicitly justifying terrorism, calling for the destruction of a state recognized by France or comparison of Israel to the Nazis. Of course, there was a story yesterday from Haaretz, the Jewish newspaper, about how Jewish pre-state underground militia terrorist groups were actually in contact with Nazi Germany and working hand-in-hand with them as they aligned on Zionism. But that's illegal to know. You're not allowed to know that. It's anti-Semitic. French Parliament to vote on law that would widen the definition of anti-Semitism in France. It's exactly the same as here in America. First, you widen the definition to include criticism of Israel. Then you claim because of that, the rates are skyrocketing, meaning this is urgent. We don't have time to think about it or the negative consequences for free speech and expression down the road. Just do it. Do it now. Shut it down. Anti-Semitism now criminalized in Ukraine, punishable by up to 8 years in prison. Of course, America, free speech country, only country in the world with the First Amendment, is seeing that chipped away by Jewish groups here. Groups backing effort to amend California's anti-Semitism law respond to criticism. Jewish California had accused the California Faculty Association and Council on American Islamic Reactions are trying to gut the bill. So there's already an anti-Semitism law in California. again, based off of the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism. Wisconsin adopted an anti-Semitism definition into law. Critics say it could chill free speech. Missouri legislature passes bill targeting anti-Semitism in schools and colleges. Florida Senate approves the creation of a statewide anti-Semitism task force. So, you know, we'll have, I guess, you know, Jews running around making sure everybody says nice things about them. I don't know. Sounds like it's a flagrant violation of the First Amendment, if you ask me. Of course, Australia has already implemented many of these, as we've seen. They call it the J7, collection of the seven largest Jewish communities on earth. They get together and spent about a year lobbying the Australian government, desperately trying to get this updated version of anti-Semitism, the definition and the laws around speech, passed. And they couldn't get it passed until that attack on Bondi Beach, in which case, in the, you know, aftermath of that, they passed it through easily. And people have already been arrested for saying things like, you know, Israel has influence in Australia. We played video of a guy giving a speech where he said exactly that. He's now been arrested and charged and faces years in prison because of his statement of obvious fact. That's the real danger of what's being put forward here. Meanwhile, Kanye West is finding it impossible to tour through Europe, which is interesting because at this moment, somebody touring through Europe is the warlord president of Syria who is literally in video and photo chopping people's heads off. So chopping people's heads off and waging pogroms against religious minorities in Syria, not enough to get you kicked out of Europe. Saying I'm going to go DEFCON on the Jews, you're not allowed anymore. You're not allowed. Kanye should have, I don't know, chopped somebody's head off, I guess. That would have been forgivable and understandable, but not merely acknowledging Jewish control in the media industry, which is then on display as they destroy Kanye's career and kick him out of the continent of Europe. At the Telegraph, support for Israel is now mandatory because you've got the legal implication, implementation of anti-Semitism laws where you can be arrested for violating them, or you have the sort of social pressure still at play where the Daily Telegraph, that's now been acquired by a German-based media giant, sent a letter to their journalist about how they have to be aligned on support for the Jewish state of Israel. And of course, you have things like Stop Anti-Semitism and the ADL here, which outside of the law will charge, convict, and punish you for thought crime using their influence over your life in order to stop you from getting a job or meeting somebody. Let's go to clip number 9 here, because this is, again, where we can see this manifesting in the real world, where people are just sort of assuming that anti-Semitism, like, is illegal, and they're acting on it, and it's kind of creating a terrifying circumstance. In fact, we're running out of time. I'm going to show that video in the first 5 minutes of the next hour, because I think it's important. I'm going to let the whole thing play. But we have seen, and there's video of, and I'm sure there's been a lot of other examples, but we have the video of the guy here in Texas who the sheriff's knocked on his door and said to him, verbatim, "We want to talk to you about the things you've been saying online about the Jewish community." "Okay, what the hell are you talking about?" And in that case, the guy said, "Get the hell off my lawn. What are you talking about? That's not illegal. Go away." And they had to go away because it's not illegal. You can't say anything. Then you had the video of the sheriffs in Florida knocking on the woman's door, holding up a phone with her tweet on it, saying, "You know, you might want to not tweet stuff out like this. It could be perceived as a call to violence." Now, what she tweeted out was condemnation of Randy Fine saying to kill all Palestinians and the Palestinian children deserve to starve to death. So Randy Fine, California or Florida congressman, can say that all Palestinian children should die, that he likes the starvation campaign that Israel is carrying out. But then if you comment on that and saying that that's a sick perspective to have, Randy Fine, then you will be approached by the police who say that your statement is a call to violence. Your condemnation of his vicious call to violence is in fact a call to violence. That's how inverted and backwards everything is. Now we have more of this happening in Tennessee of all places. And of course, we played a couple weeks ago the sheriff from Wisconsin who arrested a guy because he did a meme with the guy with the Star of David on his head. So anti-Semitism and laws against it is the biggest threat at this moment to free speech, not just here in America, but around the world. It's being implemented in a systematic and universal process that we have to prevent.
We have it all. Ultramethylene Blue, we have the best. The Shilajit, we have the best. The Turmeric, we have the best. We have the best spike protein, pro-cardiovascular, ultimate life force. The best Irish sea moss gummies and capsules. Incredible. Research for yourself. We have the best at theultrastore.com. And if you buy any of them, they're 50% off when you sign up for AutoShip. Cancel anytime. And you guarantee it never sells out. They hold it back. You get 50% off on future orders. And anybody that downloads for free the Android or the Apple app, you find both links to it at alexjonesapp.com. It's free. You get an additional 20% off at checkout on top of that. Now, I had to convince Bitly to do this. They were a little skeptical because they like to give you good deals, but not this good because it's loss leader when you use the app. But because we have an 80%+ reorder rate on things like Ultramethylene Blue, it's actually working because you get it, you love it, and you keep ordering. So these are great products. I want to induce you to try them. You know our information's hardcore. Try the products. It's just as hardcore. 1776 worldwide. We will crush the 1984 globalist system. God bless you all.